We are studying the book of Genesis, and I'm on page 59, Genesis 10, 1. We have Noah and his family just off the boat. Shem, Ham, and Japheth, the sons of Noah, and sons were born to them after the flood. The Bible, especially the Pentateuch, you know what the Pentateuch is? It's the first five books of the Bible, Pentateuch, five books. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the Pentateuch. The Bible, especially the Pentateuch, is full of toledots, which is the Hebrew word for genealogies. Now, you know that the Gospels of Matthew and Luke have toledots in them. You know, they trace the lineage of Jesus all the way back to Abraham in Matthew or to Adam in Luke. So toledots are, genealogies are a very common way for people in the ancient world to track their oral history and to keep track of their other history. Toledots are used by all ancient and aboriginal peoples, even today, for learning and maintaining oral history. The genealogy is memorized by children early on, and factual historic information is attached to the genealogy like a Christmas tree, ornaments on a tree. It was in the year that so-and-so died that fire was discovered. That's how that went. You know, they memorize the genealogy and they say, now when this person was living or died, that's when fire was discovered. You know, that's as close as it gets history in the ancient world. This provides primitive man a historical record that is descriptively accurate, if not scientifically exact. They had no real need for things to be down to year 1923 in March. I'm on page 60 now. In other words, the list is accurate but not always complete. Genesis 10:2. The sons of Japheth were Gomer and Magog and Madai and Javan, Tubal and Meshech and Tiras. The sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz and Riphah and Togarmah. The sons of Javan were Elishah and Tarshish and Kittim and Dodanim. And from these, the coastlands of the nations were separated into the other lands, everyone according to his language, according to the families and their nations. Now, the genealogies of the chased down the lineages, and the ancient peoples chased their lineage down through their stream. The Bible tends to chase the lineage of Shem and only mentions the lineage of the others as it relates to biblical stories. So basically, once you get to Shem and basically the stem of Shem, there gets to be less and less interest in what happens out there beyond all that. That's because the Bible is history. It's his story. It's a story from Adam to Jesus to the millennial reign. It's a straight shot history from Adam to the king of the millennial reign. It's one big long history. It's like a frozen section where they take that pipe and they stick it down through the ice, they bring it up, spread everything out, and they can tell you what all happened over the millennium, centuries, whatever. So the sons of Japheth are listed to a certain level, not real far. And there are some of these things in here, like for instance, the sons of Javan, Tarshish, was a group of people who settled in the south of Spain. And the ships of Tarshish were the farthest east, I guess, that the Mediterranean went. And so the Bible talks about the ships of Tarshish. Remember that the Mediterranean was the great central sea of the ancient world. And people lived all around its borders. And for much of the history of the Mediterranean, people were able to sail along the coast. They're called coastal crawlers. And so they could transfer their goods so far in either direction along the coast. That meant that if there was spices in Egypt, there were people in the other part of the world who never saw them. Because the spices could only go so far before they were gone, before they rotted. Then what happened is the Phoenicians, who are part of the Philistines, the Phoenicians, based in Tyre and Sidon, which were Philistine outposts, developed the ability to navigate by the stars, and they began to be able to cross the Mediterranean and wind up where they wanted to be. They were able to navigate by the stars. And so they built huge three-masted boats to be able to handle the seas and whatever. And they started crisscrossing the Mediterranean. So when that happened, what happened is spices from Egypt could wind up in Rome. And, you know, gold from Bithynia could wind up in, you know, across whatever. That increased the trade in our world by 10,000-fold. because of the ability to navigate or to transnavigate the Mediterranean Sea. That was a later development. So when we see these people here, Japheth are the Europeans, which ultimately is most of us too, because we're descended from the Europeans. But and if you look at one of those maps that show the sons of Noah and where their people went, it's very clear. You can see they're green, red, and blue, and you can see who went where and what tribe they were from. So Meshech, for instance, is the root word for Moscow. Javan is the root word for Greece, I think. Gomer and Magog. Ashkenaz is the Greek word. It's a Spanish word. You know that Jews of the 21st or 15th to the 21st century break into two groups, Ashkenazic and Sephardic. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, actually Sephardic. And the Sephardic Jews are the Spanish Jews. And the Ashkenazic Jews are the Germanic Jews. So Ashkenaz, those people wind up in the Germanic countries. And based inside of the word Ashkenaz is the word Nazi. It's all coming out of the same language there. Not that the Jews were Nazis, but that word is all part of that. So when you look at people like Fiddler on the Roof and whatever, people were Ashkenazic or Sephardic Jews. So you can, anyway, these words, these names here, Kittim, for instance, is a name for Cyprus. So when we talk about Daniel, he talks about the ships of Kittim came. That was people out of Cyprus. It was actually Romans, but they came out of Cyprus. So these names are given to us because they apply, most of them, to the biblical story. That's the reason why we get this. We don't get the vast majority of the rest of it because it doesn't apply. For instance, we have no idea who Job came from, except that he was a contemporary. So he was over in the east, and Abraham is the most righteous man in the west, and Job was the most righteous man in the east. And that's about all we know of him. We're not sure where he comes from. He had a relationship with God like Abraham. Remember that Jethro, who is the Midianite father-in-law of Moses, he came from one of Abraham's sons by his third wife Keturah, and they were following the Lord. You know, it's the time of Moses. So we're tracking all these people through this. So the sons of Japheth became, among others, the Europeans, and numerous lines are now traced horizontally because they have figured. Have future and outgoing importance to mankind. The sons of Ham were Cush and Mizraim and Put and Canaan. You see some names in there you recognize. The sons of Cush were Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Raamah, Sabtika, and sons of Raamah were Sheba and Dedan. Now Cush became the father of Nimrod. He became a mighty hunter on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord, and therefore it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calneh in the land of Shinar. And from that land he went forth into Assyria and built Nineveh and Rehoboth-ir and Calah and Rezin between Nineveh and Calah. This is a great city. So here's an example. We have the lineage of Ham, and mentioned is Cush. And Cush, we're told, that's the genealogical Christmas tree. Hanging on Cush are some historical information. Cush was the father of Nimrod, and Nimrod was one of the very, very most important founders of empires in the very ancient world. And we see some of the stuff he's mentioned here. The word Babel is becomes Babylon. Acadia is an area that shows up. Shinar, the land of Shinar, or the Chaldees. Assyria is mentioned by name. Nineveh is mentioned by name. So it was during Cush's time that we're told that these things happened. Now, that's how history is tacked onto genealogy. It's to give people in the ancient world the ability to, because they don't have books. It's important to us because these have biblical implications, and that's why they're written here. I'm sure that there were many other people attached to many of these other things, but they don't have biblical implications. Mizraim became the father of Ludim and Anamim and Labim and Naphturim and Pathruzim and Kalsluhim, from which came the Philistines, we're told that, and Kaphtorim, which are also Philistines. Now, those of you who are grandparents might want to help some of your children when you're looking for names for their babies, because there's a lot of really nice and interesting names here. They haven't been used in a while. I'm sure your grandchildren would stick out if their name was Naphuthim, you know. Anyway, Canaan, now Canaan, for instance, that's a name we know a lot about because his people became the Canaanites. So these are Hamites, the people who lived in Canaan, people who lived in Africa, they were all Hamites. Now remember, the Canaanites are driven out of the Middle East, of Mesopotamia, entirely, and they're now repopulated with Arabs. So that what we have in, and Egypt was depopulated of all of its Hamites, and they're now Arabs. The only Hamites we have left in the world are Africans. Remember, we had this whole discussion about cursed be Canaan and all this sort of thing on this last conversation. Canaan became the father of Sidon, his firstborn. Remember, in the great area of the Canaanites, there was the Philistine city of Sidon and Tyre. His firstborn in Heth and the Jebusite. Jebus was the name of the city that became Jerusalem. It has biblical implications. And the Amorite and the Girgashite. These are all people we run into in the whole story of the Bible about, you know, the Amorites are a subset of the Canaanite people. And when Joshua and the people came into the land, they were dealing with the Amorite peoples there. The Hivite, the Arkite, the Sinite, the Arvadite, Zemorite, Hamathite, and after the families of the Canaanite were spread abroad. The territory of the Canaanite extended from Sidon as you go toward Gerar, as far as Gaza as you go toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and Admon, Zeboim as far as Lasha. That's the Middle East. That's the what we think of as Israel and Lebanon, Syria, and all of that area down there. These are the sons of Ham according to their families, according to their languages, by their lands and their nations. So the sons of Ham became the Egyptians and the Africans, the Canaanites. Nimrod, the son of Cush, became world-renowned before the Lord as a hunter and conqueror, as the founder of many world great cities, and a world-class pagan. Nimrod was very famous for his paganism, his abandonment of the God of Noah. Nimrod is a biblical name for one of several men, the Arcadian ruler Sargon the Great, or the Assyrian king Tukulti-Ninurta I. I think I'm going to name one of my kids that one. That'd be good. Tukulti-Ninurta. All right. Also to Shem, the father of all the children of Eber, and the older brother of Japheth, children were born. The sons of Shem were Elam. That's where we get the Media Persians. Asher, the Assyrians. Arpachshad, Lum, Aram. The sons of Aram were Uz and Hul, and Gether and Mash. Arpachshad became the father of Shelah. Shelah became the father of Eber, and two sons were born to Eber, and the name of the one was Peleg, for in his day the earth was divided. So when we get to the place where we get the separation of the languages, it's during the time of Peleg. Okay? His brother's name was Joktan, and Joktan became the father of Almodad and Shelef and Hazarmaveth and Gerar and Hadaram and Uzal and Dikla and Obal and Abimael and Sheba and Ophir and Havilah and Jobab, whatever. At any rate, Ophir, for instance, became famous because where he was is a huge gold region. And he shows up in the during the conversation of the kings. We know that Solomon had a huge gold mines in Ophir. In fact, he had ships that were coming out of the sea down there for his gold. Sepher, the hill country of the east. These are the sons of Shem, according to their families, according to their languages, by their lands, according to their nations. These are the families of the sons of Noah, according to their genealogies, by their nations. Out of these nations were separated on the earth after the flood. So the sons of Shem became Jews, Arabs, and Asians. In the days of Peleg, the earth is divided. This is a lead-in to what comes next, the Tower of Babel. Now, I did all that to show you that there are reasons why these genealogies are here. Because inevitably, people will tell me, I have no idea, can't understand who begot who and who begot who, and what difference does it make? Well, it makes a huge difference if you're a Bible student, because you can actually trace history of the Bible and people in the Bible using outside sources outside the Bible based on this kind of information, especially after archaeology took hold between the First and Second Wars. World War actually started right before the First World War. And what happened is that things began to be uncovered, information began to come out of the sand that showed that these biblical peoples and names were actually real people. For instance, Ur of the Chaldees, which is a very important biblical place. It's where Noah settled. It's where Abraham came from. All this sort of thing. It's the Chaldeans were very important biblical people in terms of the Persians. But Ur of the Chaldees was not known to exist historically until after World War II. So that meant that anybody who read the Bible up to World War II had to take a vast majority of this historical stuff on faith that today actually has real evidence. As they uncovered the stele, which are the S-T-E-L-E, the big pylons and stuff where they chiseled information into it and whatever, walls on the side of mountains, walls on the side of buildings. When groups did not get mad at the previous group and eradicate their history, whatever survived provides backup for an understanding for people who are studying history, including Bible students. There is a guy named W.A. Albright, who was one of the early and greatest biblical archaeologists coming out of England, one of your guys, coming out of England right before the first, between the wars, but starting earlier than that. And the stuff that he and his people found contributed greatly to the idea that the Bible was historically accurate. So, before that, you just had to believe it. Now, any comment on that before I go on?
What years were the Dead Sea Scrolls? During the 40s?
And later. And later, yeah. So that's really late information. And the thing about the Dead Sea Scrolls is it brought a bunch of new information to us, but it also confirmed things that were previously believed or had limited support and now began to be supported in large measure. So it sort of added to the weight of people's belief systems.
I have a question. So the Jews in Russia and Europe were Semites?
All Jews are Semites.
But some look just like me.
Well, they all got run over by trucks, and then the coloration and that sort of thing had a lot to do with genetic pastures that we go along based on living and diet and all that sort of thing. You actually have Jews that are pitch black, and you have Jews that are Oriental and whatever. So, but they were still nonetheless descendants of Shem.
Okay.
So, they look like you. And me. The Russians, I think, are probably Ashkenazic because they're part of the Germanic thing. The Sephardic Jews, in particular, went through a specific high-level persecution during the Middle Ages. You know, you had the Moors coming up and persecuting them from below, and you had the Christians coming down and persecuting them from this direction. This is where you get some of these historical Shakespearean conversations about people being forced into becoming Christians and Desdemona. I mean, all these kind of, there's a lot of stuff in history. You get these conversations about Jews not being allowed to do anything but be money lenders. All of that is really crushed the Sephardic Jews more than anybody else. The Germanic Jews tended to hide up in the, I mean, they didn't go through quite as much of that kind of stuff. But it's all interesting stuff. I mean, how far back does it go?
Yeah, when
you mean where is it demonstrably?
Yes.
Where can we prove it outside the Bible? The history covered in the Bible goes back to 4400 BC. The history in the Bible?
Yeah, okay.
The Bible ends at the end of the first century. In the book of Acts, okay? And John. John wrote in 90. Okay? And after John, there's no biblical writing. And so that's the end of the first century. Yeah, you got to remember that when you do Bible study, you have the Bible itself, but all cultures, biblical cultures, also had other writings that they valued. For instance, Jesus and Paul and John and some of the writers of the gospel often quoted from non-biblical books. So when we talk about that, when we do the study on Matthew, we say Jesus quoted this from Enoch. Well, Enoch was a non-biblical book that was highly respected. The Shepherd of Hermas was a first century non-biblical book that was highly respected. Tobit, Judith, there's all kinds of Holofernes. There's all kinds of works that the rabbis respected that didn't make the canon of the scriptures. Pardon? Yeah. He's given us all we need to know. He's given us all we need to know. Yeah. For instance, there's nothing on the Bible that says that you should not speed, but there is something that says you should obey the government. You see what I'm saying? We're meant to extrapolate. There's nothing in the Bible that says that you can't do this and this and this to your neighbor, but we're told very clearly, Old and New Testament, that you're supposed to love your neighbor. You're supposed to treat the alien right. You're supposed to, you know what I'm saying? So we've been given all that we need to know. You know, as we go to heaven, and we're going to get further revelation, but it won't. That's right. It won't have been necessary. We're not going to get there and go, well, if you had told me that, you know, I mean, you know, if you had forgotten that, we'd all been saints, you know.
Because yeah, I was wondering, I'm not writing any of the rest of the Bible, and I don't know anybody else.
No.
There's no book of Rod out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
We already know what we need to know.
The belief of evangelical histories, Jewish and Christian historians, theologians, is the Bible is closed. Y'all realize that there are about 13 books of the Bible that the Catholics have that we don't have. The pseudepigrapha. The Catholic Church has accepted 13 additional books that the Protestants don't use. None of them that I know are written that far away. Many of them are written in the Old Testament. You know, like the work of the Maccabees and all that kind of stuff. Judith Tobit, whatever. We as a culture agree which laws are really important. We agree. So if you do this, you're going to get a ticket for $50 about once every 400 times you do it, because that's all you get caught, you know. And if you do this, you're going to go to the electric chair. So, but a lot of that's culturally derived. For instance, it is culturally derived that it is illegal to have more than one wife. It's not biblically supported at all, but it's culturally derived. And because we live in this culture and we agree to obey the government, we agree to have only one wife. You know, the way to get around that is have one wife and seven or eight concubines who happen to live in your house. You're not broken any law. Yeah. Yeah. You better marry rich concubines. All these guys. Okay. So, yeah. Any other comments on this? I guess it's interesting. I'm not going to get very far again today. That's fine. Let me just see what I can wrap up here. Well, actually, I'm not going to, because where we're going to go now is the Tower of Babel, and that's a whole big section. Well, I've intentionally slowed down here because I think Genesis is really important. And there's a lot of stuff in Genesis that causes people problems. And so I'm trying to deal with some of that as I go. Like, what the heck is a genealogy doing there? And what can I expect to be historically accurate, or why do I think something's accurate, that sort of thing. So, you know, we spent a great deal of time talking about creation. Let me say this. Did I say I was raised Catholic?
Yeah.
And that I didn't know anything about the Bible? Yeah, so what happened is that when I became a Christian in an evangelical world, they told me that the Bible was the inspired word of God, etc., etc., etc. So all of a sudden I began to read it as if it was true. And it caused me all kinds of mental gymnastics. What psychologists call cognitive dissonance. In other words, it was confusing at all kinds of levels. So if I believed it was true, and if it caused me all kinds of cognitive dissonance, then I had to figure out how to solve those problems. And so I spent 40-some years working through those one at a time until I get to the place where I have an acceptable explanation for all of those things. Like, for instance, I believe in a seven-day creation. I could be wrong, but I do know that it can happen. I know that it's possible. You know what I'm saying? So all of the things, anything that anybody here would struggle with in terms of how does that work, or how does this work, or how does that mesh with this or that, I've gone through all of that now, personally, because I'm just like anybody else. I read that and I go, huh? You know, there's so I have spent these years solving my cognitive dissonance, and I have very little cognitive dissonance left. Not everybody wants to spend that much time doing all that. So as a teacher, my goal is to help you with your cognitive dissonance. and that's why I'm doing this slowly. I don't think a lot of you have cognitive dissonance over the nine spiritual gifts, you know. That's not really. All right, somebody pray us out, please.